Blog Talk Radio.
You are now listening to the History Lesson Podcast with your host, Ringside Robert. Welcome to the History Lesson Podcast. This is Eric Lorta filling in for Ringside Robert this week. On this episode, we have an exciting fight for you on the History Lesson. In fact, it's one of my favorites. It took place July 18th, 1997. Johnny, Mi Vida Loca, Tapia versus Danny Kid Dynamite Romero. What a fight, man. Just a build-up to this fight was just priceless. You had two camps. They hated each other. The fighters hated each other. There was some family issues between them. We'll go into all that. It was just a mess, just a complete mess. Let me give you a little background on these two. They were both from Albuquerque, New Mexico. Both of them were hometown heroes. The problem with these two hometown guys, though, is if you were from New Mexico and you were a fight fan, you only liked one or the other. There was really no in-between. You were either in Romero's camp or you were in Tapia's camp. It's just like in New York. You're either a Yankees fan or a Mets fan. You're not both. You're one or the other. Danny Romero was, he was the guy. He was viewed by a lot of people as a straight-laced guy, the good guy. You know, as far as boxing went and his skill level, he reminded me a lot of Roberto Duran. He had power in both hands. He was running through people left and right. He won the IBF super flyweight title, and honestly, man, he seemed unbeatable at that weight. When I saw him fight and I saw the way he was running through opponents and just like a hot knife through butter, I mean, he was just killing people. He was murking people with both of those, right and left hands. He had power in both, you know. So it was one of those things, man. It was just like, that guy looks just so good, so unbeatable. On the flip side of that, Johnny Tapia, you know, he came from a very different background, and Danny Romero was also, too. You know, he came from a two-parent household. He had a mother, a father, very stable family. Johnny Tapia didn't have that. You know, he had a very difficult life. His father had reportedly been murdered while his mother was pregnant with him. When he was 8 years old, and this is just awful, and I can't even believe that any human being has to go through this, let alone an eight-year-old. When he was 8 years old, his mother, Virginia, was kidnapped, raped, hung, and repeatedly stabbed and left for dead. Tapia, again, he's 8 years old, was awakened by her screams, saw her chained to the back of a pickup truck. He tried to alert other people in his house. No one believed him. Just think about that for a minute. You know, this is what he had to endure as a kid, you know, and finding out his mother was in this kind of shape, going in to tell people, try to get help, and nobody believed him. You know, what on earth, man? His mother was later found by the police and taken to the hospital after she crawled 100 yards to a road. She died four days later after the attack without regaining consciousness. She never came to. After that, he was pretty much raised by his grandmother. He started boxing when he was 9 years old. Later on, he found a trainer. This is where it gets interesting. Who was the trainer? Danny Romero Sr. He trained Tapia. But Tapia left him after a few fights. Now, from a few different accounts, this was not a good breakup. So much so that Danny Romero harbored a lot of ill will because of how Tapia handled the situation and how he handled his father in the situation. After he left Romero Sr., Tapia went on to win the USBA super flyweight title and defended it twice. Things were going well until 1991. That was the year. Johnny Tapia tested positive for cocaine use in three separate tests. He was suspended for 3 years. That's right. 3 years for the powder, son. 3 years. Think about that for a minute. If I could just go off topic here for a minute, how come for steroids you're only suspended for a year? Use the powder, he's on 3 years. Could have been a year, maybe because it was three different tests. I don't know. But it would seem three different incidents. But whatever the case, man, he got suspended for 3 years. So for all intents and purposes, his boxing career probably over. You know, it's hard to come back after 3 years. You know, I don't know. But Tapia, of course, being himself, being Johnny Tapia, came back to boxing and won fight after fight and finally captured the WBO title. We can end the podcast right there because you want to talk about a comeback story from where he was, where he'd been, and to come out on top like that. I mean, that's a special – that takes a lot of character, takes a special person, man. Romero had also been on the fight scene, and this set up a major unification bout between Romero and Tapia. The logical place for this fight? Yeah, you guessed it, Albuquerque. Albuquerque, New Mexico, right in the hometown. You have Danny Romero, who's the IBF champion, who's slicing through people. You got Johnny Tapia, who's the WBO champ, both from New Mexico. Big rivalry. Why not put it in Mexico? New Mexico. Albuquerque said, absolutely not. There was so much bad blood between these camps and the two fighters. Albuquerque said, take it somewhere else. Think about that. Think about what a mega fight that would have been in Albuquerque. I mean, that sells out any place in New Mexico. And they said, nope, get it out of here. This, I mean, that's how volatile this situation was. That's how volatile these two camps were, the blood, the bad blood between these guys. Danny Romero never forgot the way he treated that, you know, the perceived treatment of his father by Johnny Tapia. Now, whether it went down that way or not, that's how he perceived it. So what do? They got to go to Vegas. Top Rank secured the Las Vegas Hilton as the site for the super flyweight mega fight. But the Las Vegas Hilton backed out about a month prior. Why? Why would they back out? They're not Albuquerque. They said they'd sign the fight. They said they'd have the fight. Why on earth would they back out? Enter Mike Tyson. Yeah, Mike Tyson, the former heavyweight champion of the world, that Mike Tyson. How does he impact the fight? Mike Tyson's a heavyweight. These guys are super flyweights. What's going on here? Well, a month prior to that, Mike Tyson bit off Evander Holyfield's ear. That fight took place in June at the MGM Grand. This caused a riot at the MGM Grand and forced the casino to actually close for a few hours. I don't know if you know anything about Vegas, but, you know, they kind of make their money in the casino business. They bring fights in, you know, they host the big fights, but most of their money is made at the tables. So anytime those things are shut down, that's not good. And that's actually unprecedented. They don't shut those tables down for nothing. If you go to Vegas, there's a table open at 5 a.m. in the morning, at 3 a.m. in the morning. You want to place a bet, you can do it there any time of day. As a matter of fact, they don't even have clocks in the casinos. And it pretty much goes for any casino because they don't want you looking at the time. I've been here 2 hours. Who cares? Don't think about the time. That's what they want. They want to keep you there so there's no clocks, no nothing. So the Las Vegas Hilton saw this whole thing at the MGM Grand, saw Mike Tyson take a chunk out of Evander Holyfield's ear, and they said, you know, with this fight coming up, the bad blood, Albuquerque didn't even want this fight. With Tapia and Romero, yeah, no thanks, man. I'm not. You're going to have to find another place for it. This is literally like a month before the fight. They told Top Rank, hey, we're not into this, man. Even though they were under contract with Top Rank, they cited some insurance nonsense, and they were able to cancel the contract. So this forces Top Rank, Bob Arum and Top Rank, to go somewhere else. They don't have much time. Who came to the rescue? UNLV. The UNLV, and I'm not sure if it was a Thomas and Mack Arena back then, but it was on the campus of UNLV. They agreed to host the fight, and it was back on. So leading into the fight now, Johnny Tapia, and rightfully so, he's as unstable as they come. It seemed like he always thrives on chaos. So much so, leading into the fight, he got rid of his trainer, Jesse Reed, literally just weeks before the fight, and hired Eddie Futch. He then rehired Jesse Reed to work as the co-trainer the night of the fight. Johnny Tapia was always chaotic. It's almost like I said, man, he can't function under stability and normal circumstances. But you know what? I mean, that's really what made him great. Some people are just like that. They need that chaos, and he was one of those guys. After all the turmoil, after all the months and the groundswell, everything, the cancellations, the trainers being fired, we finally make it to the fight. If you've ever watched Johnny Tapia fight, it's like watching a fly. He never stands still. He never rests. He's always moving. That night was no different. Tapia brings such an energy into the ring when he fights. During the first few rounds, Tapia did his normal routine of moving in and out, dropping lead rights, but most importantly, working the body and staying out of unnecessary exchanges. That's his game. Hit and not get hit. Get out of there. Drop the lead right hands. Go to the body. Wear Romero down. Take that power away. At the end of one of the earlier rounds, Tapia actually went back to press row and yelled, "He doesn't hit that hard." He yelled it to the press. Romero pretty much came alive in the middle rounds. He couldn't figure out. He just couldn't catch Tapia early on. He started to come alive in the middle rounds, but never really connected with anything of substance. I think there was one time in the seventh round, if I'm not mistaken, he clocked him with a big right hand, and Tapia kind of goofed around and clowned and kind of acted like he was hurt. And short of that, though, he really didn't land much. He didn't land anything really effective. That's not to say he wasn't winning rounds. He was winning rounds. But overall, he had a hard time. He just wasn't fighting his fight. This wasn't – you could tell by his body language. You could tell the way the fight was going, this would not favor Romero. And Romero actually started to slow down because of the body shots. And when he slowed down, he became really predictable. It became obvious that Romero was losing on the scorecards, and the longer the fight went, the more apparent it was that he needed a knockdown or something dramatic to work his way back into the fight. That's the worst position to be in if you're a fighter, because Tapia knew what was coming, the big shots. That's all he could throw, and he had been masterful at avoiding them all night. He couldn't hit Tapia at all. And given the fact that he knew he was down on the scorecards, he had to go to his bread and butter. He had to get the hammers out, and he had to swing for the fences or at least make something dramatic happen. The crowd shifted to Tapia throughout the fight, and they were kind of split as they came in. And as the fight went on, the crowd shifted to Tapia. By the end, he was a big crowd favorite. As the final bell rang, Tapia threw his hands in the air, and the crowd just went nuts. The Battle of Albuquerque was now over. It was time to go to the scorecards. Judges Clark Sammartino and Jerry Roth both scored the fight 116-112, and Glenn Hamada scored the fight 115-113, all for the winner by unanimous decision. Johnny, Mi Vida Loca, Tapia. What a fight. What a fight. I remember when this fight came out, I remember taking Romero for this fight. I thought Romero had the better resume. I thought he had beaten more name fighters. He was running through everyone. He could box. He had power. He's like a little Duran. No way he loses this fight. No way. Man, was I ever wrong. This fight, and when the scorecards came out, honestly, it could have been 117. It could have been 9-3. It could have been 10-2. They gave Romero a lot of leeway. They gave Romero a lot of leeway, especially Hamada. He gave him the benefit of the doubt in a lot of rounds, because 115-113 was a lot closer than it really seemed. And even 116-112, you could have made a case for, like I said, 117. He may have stuck in, and there's a lot of rounds that could have went either way, or some rounds that could have went either way. But by and large, man, Tapia just controlled the fight. He controlled the night, and he walked home as the undisputed super flyweight champion, WBO and IBF champion. Just amazing fight. If you guys get a chance, go to YouTube, catch this fight, Tapia versus Romero. You won't be disappointed. Just, if nothing else, to know Johnny Tapia's story, his backstory, to me was just so incredible. After going through the tragedy that he went through as a young boy, and then to reach adulthood, to win a title, win the USBA title, and then have boxing taken away from him because he made some mistakes. He got suspended because of the drugs, and then to come back again, and this was his crowning fight, man. This really was. He had some wars with Paulie Ayala and that kind of thing, but by and large, I tell you what, man, by and large, this was the fight that kind of put him back on the map. This is what everybody, when you talk about Johnny Tapia, this is kind of the first fight that you, when you look at his body of work, this is the first big, big fight. So congratulations to him, and may he rest in peace. And let's go ahead and move on to some boxing headlines for the week. So we'll start off with this. Let me tell you something. Thank God for Adrian Broner. Just when I think it's going to be a slow news week, man, AB always finds a way to come through with flying colors. He never lets me down. On Tuesday of this week, Adrian Broner showed up 3.5 hours late to court and appeared drunk or hungover, according to the judge. Broner tried to make excuses as to why he was late, stating that he thinks somebody put something in his drink the night before. The judge threw the book at him. I live in Cincinnati, and I know of Judge Robert Ruhlman. He doesn't mess around. He really doesn't. You always see him in the cases here and everything like that. None of those judges down there mess around, man. I've never been in front of them. I just, you know, I live in Cincinnati, so I know these things, man. He sentenced Broner to 30 days in jail. To add insult to injury, this is the craziest part of the whole thing. Had Broner showed up on time, the case was going to be dismissed. Now, hey, who knows? The lawyers, they had worked things out. The case was going to be dismissed. All you had to do is show up on time. You idiot. You're an absolute idiot. All you had to do is show up on time. Who shows up to court 3.5 hours late? Why are you out partying the night before knowing that you got to get up early and go to court the next day? What's wrong with you? Broner, incidentally, was in court for the incident that happened a few months ago in a local bowling alley here in Cincinnati up in Madison. He apparently robbed a guy and punched him in the face over a bowling game. Apparently, the story goes, I think it was maybe $8,000 or $6,000 they took off him, that Broner took off him. I'm not sure what the exact number is. I have to look it up. But these two were bowling for money, like a big money game, like $1,000 a game. Okay, you know, I bowl for $1,000 a game when you're not really a professional bowler. Seems kind of silly, but hey, what do I know? So at the end of the night, Broner didn't have the money to pay him. He went outside. He was ticked off, apparently, that he lost the game. Allegedly, he goes outside, punches a guy in the face, takes his money. The guy wakes up, takes his money. Apparently, he went to his car to get a gun also. This is Broner now. Went to his car to get a gun, waved it around, kept saying, I'm AB, and you can hear his friends on the tape. If you go to TMZ, you can watch a video. The best part is you can hear his friends on tape because, you know, the first thing he's going to do is try to say that wasn't me and you can't see anything. AB, chill out. AB, chill out. That's all you hear on the tape, so clearly it's him. Of course, we'll have more on this on Sunday's live show at 7 p.m. Also, Canelo Alvarez and Liam Smith are in the news. As we all heard by now, Canelo and Liam Smith have signed and they're headed for Jerry World and Dallas Stadium where the Cowboys play. The big question that we were wondering in all week was, you know, will it sell out the arena? That stadium holds 88,000 people. 88,000. You want to think about that. How much? I mean, that's a lot of people to go see Canelo. I mean, so Canelo, you know, if it was Canelo Pacquiao or Canelo Mayweather or Canelo, you know, fill in the blank with a big name, you're thinking to yourself, Canelo Triple G, you know, something like that. You know, maybe, you know, that's a good amount of people, man. If we price the tickets right, you could sell out that stadium. But it looks like they're not going to sell it out. According to Steve Kim, the cheapest ticket prices there will be around $40. I think originally they were slated at $25, I think, when Pacquiao was there, but now they're going to be around $40. So they're looking – the goal there is to sell about 40,000 seats or so. So they're going to block off a lot of that arena or a lot of that stadium just so you can, you know, I guess because I guess they're going to have to block off over half of it, you know, because you're not going to sell that many tickets. There's no way you sell it, especially at $40 a pop. Come on, to see him and Liam Smith. And don't get me wrong, man. You know, and obviously the stadium will hold more if needed, but that's not their goal right now. The goal is about 40,000 seats to go. But, you know, I don't know if that fight sells out, man. Liam Smith is a good fighter, and he's not going to be a cakewalk for him, man. He's a really good fighter, but that being said, he's not really a household name. I mean, are people going to shell out X amount of dollars to go see Liam Smith? I don't know. You know, the promotion better be stellar on this, that's for sure. Let's touch on some UFC news real quick here. Brock Lesnar, WWE and UFC superstar, test positive again. He's tested positive twice now. This time it was a test taken on the day of UFC 200. It was suspected and rumored that he tested positive for estrogen blockers. This is according to Lance Pugmire. In fact, that's the same one that John Jones was busted for. If it's true and it stands, they'll have their day in court and everything like that. But if it stands, that's going to be 2 years for these two fighters, both him and Jones. And the difference with Brock Lesnar's test, obviously Jones didn't fight at UFC 200, so it doesn't really matter now. But Brock Lesnar tested positive the day of the fight. So, I don't know. And sometimes it takes, the question is, how come he was allowed to fight? Sometimes it takes a while to get the test back. I don't know. I can't answer that. But, I mean, you can't really say the UFC would not have pulled him. I mean, they pulled out John Jones, who's a bigger star in the UFC than Brock Lesnar, that's for sure. And that fight with Cormier was going to be a monster. So that was their headline event, and they pulled him out to put Miesha Tate and Amanda Nunes on the top billing. So I don't know. So this Saturday on pay-per-view, Terrence Crawford versus Victor Postol. The craziest thing about this is that everyone agrees it's a good fight. Absolutely, everyone agrees that the fight should not be on pay-per-view also. This is like in unison, man. Everybody says it's a great fight. Everybody says it should not be on pay-per-view. And, you know, I got to agree with them. I know what they're doing with Crawford. I just think with Victor Postol, it's not, you know, I'll be surprised. They say that the buy rate has to be low for them to make their money back or break even. So we'll see how it does. I'm anxious for the numbers. Obviously, you know, I'm not a big fan of pay-per-view, so I hope the pay-per-view tanks. I mean, I love Terrence Crawford. I love Victor Postol, but I hope the pay-per-view tanks because, in my opinion, the more pay-per-views tank, the less we have to watch. And, you know, I'm not crazy about the matches that PBC's putting together right now, but they're free. So if I can get good fights for free, that's kind of the route I'm going to go. No more of the $100 pay-per-views, hopefully. But I think the pay-per-view here is going to be about $60. I think it's $60 in high def and then $50 the other way. So $50 for standard. Nobody watches standard anymore, I don't think. But nonetheless, we talked about the fight actually on the last show. Both Robert, Ringside Robert, and Beeb are picking Victor Postol. I'm picking Crawford. I think Crawford is just way too skilled and versatile for Postol. I think the ability to change and adapt is going to be the difference in this fight for Crawford. I see Crawford every time I watch him, he adapts to the other guy. He can figure the other guy out and ultimately get the win. I don't see Postol doing that so much. I think Postol has one way to fight. It's a good way, and it's very solid, very textbook, but Terrence Crawford really adapts. He's almost like a chameleon in there. I give the edge to Crawford, but again, hey, that's why they fight, so we can see what happens. Some news that we'll cover on the live show on Sunday at 7 p.m. This Sunday at 7 p.m., obviously, we'll go over the Crawford Postol fight, review that, and then some of the other stories. Canelo shames Triple G on his opponent's choice. Canelo says that Triple G is taking too small of an opponent. How about that? Pot, this is kettle. Errol Spence, his next fight is lined up and signed. What that means, and if he wins, what does that mean? We'll go ahead and talk about that. And some crazy news here, man. Amir Khan willing to fight Conor McGregor in the UFC. We'll talk about that also. He put a tweet out earlier saying that he put a picture of him at the UFC gym and said training has begun. So very interesting, very interesting. And we'll get into that more on Sunday. We'll also have the results for all the fights this weekend as well as more news and rumors. Until then, you can contact me on Twitter at ringside73. And make sure to visit our website for all the latest news at www.ringsidereporter.com. This is Eric Lorda. You have a good one, and Ringside Robert will return next week.